comment. Is that what she? Is that what Wayne's wife says? I don't know. All right. Yeah, I guess I should open my chat box and scroll down.
So
there we go.
I imagine we'll start with our experiences seeing Phantom Menace for the first time.
We're actually going to start with some news.
Oh, okay.
And then we can go into our experiences watching Phantom Menace for the first time.
We're
and
starting with Paul tells us the news.
Okay, man. Apparently there's news. By the way, I put in the Funny Books chat this week a Comixology Unlimited book, The Tormented. Paul,
yeah,
is right up your alley.
Okay, I'll give it a shot.
It is so good. Two issues are out right now.
Okay. So it's good. Not a trade or anything. Okay.
No.
The Tormented.
I read it and I was like, oh, Paul's going to dig this.
Paul likes horrible things.
Oh, God. And it is. It is so horrible.
Paul likes what he sees.
Yeah.
How is Jen doing, by the way?
She's doing good.
Good. Good.
All right. We are ready to light the fire that sparks the resistance.
Wrong era, but okay.
Or whatever. Spark the fire that lights the resistance. What's the quote? I don't know. You know what I mean. Let's start this podcast.
Yes. Let's light this candle.
Are we indeed recording, Paul?
We are indeed recording.
Okay, because I can't see shit. I mean, literally none of my desktop loaded this morning. It's all
Okay. So it's just
y'all are just voices in the dark.
You don't even know who's going to be talking. Is it Andrew? Who knows?
Haven't got a fucking clue.
When Wayne just magically pops in, you're going to be surprised as shit.
I will be startled is what will happen.
You might wake up
a little
bit.
How did Wayne get behind me?
A little incontinence.
I peed a little bit. All right, y'all ready?
We are ready.
Let's do it.
No, this is Paul.
This is Andrew. Didn't see that coming.
Misa, very, very excited.
Oh my god.
Okay, we are off to the races.
It's Phantom Menace with Aaron and Paulie and Andrew.
Woo! Yes. Woo! If you have missed your Star Wars with Aaron and Paulie, we are back on an irregular schedule. Because we want to talk about the 25th anniversary of Star Wars The Phantom Menace, Episode 1. I got that all out of order.
25 years. That's crazy.
Yeah, right?
Makes me feel old.
Yeah. I remember very distinctly where I was, and which we'll talk about here in a little bit.
Okay.
25 years ago. I mean, not today, but my relation to The Phantom Menace.
I assume you're saying high school class somewhere, right? Anyway, well, you'll tell us later.
I'll tell you later.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But before we do, there has been some Star Wars related news since the last time we spoke.
Oh, really?
Yes. And because we're dealing, because we're dealing with the 25th anniversary of Phantom Menace and May the 4th coming up, this is definitely like a big time of the year for Star Wars news, up to and including that we will be getting Star Wars. Oh no, wait, Star Wars Celebration doesn't happen until next year. Forget it. Since we last spoke, we actually did a special episode. I think maybe our first or second episode of Star Wars with Aaron and Polly, where we talked about Star Wars Tales of the Jedi, which was a series of short, stories from Disney Plus. I think they focused on Ahsoka Tano and Count Dooku. They announced that season 2 has been completed and will be released on May the 4th on Disney Plus. It's going to be Tales of the Empire. And it's going to be focusing on Morgan Elsbeth from the Ahsoka TV series and Barriss Offee, who I believe was a character in the Clone Wars show. I don't know that character as well, but
I'm not familiar with her either.
Yeah. So, another six six part series. You know, they released the trailer online. Obviously, we'll see, you know, those characters, but we're also going to see Thrawn, the Force Sister, General Grievous, Darth Vader, the Grand Inquisitor, the Night Sisters, and, you know, kind of all tying together, you know, threads that have led in between where we saw those characters previously in Clone Wars and shows like that, up to, I guess, Ahsoka and where those characters are now.
That's
and it features
cool.
all the same cast. Like, Lars Mikkelsen is voicing Thrawn. Jason Isaacs as the Grand Inquisitor. The same actress is doing Morgan Elsbeth.
That's great.
That's pretty cool that they're tying it into, you know, the current stuff that's going on. I like that.
Yeah, I think it's a fun, you know, I mean, it's so, they're so bite-sized. You can knock out the series in like an hour.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to it. I mean, we may even get back on the mics to discuss it.
Ooh. Whoa.
I know. I shouldn't commit us. We didn't talk about it off mic to see if that's a realistic thing.
That is some crazy talk. We're going to have to completely renegotiate Andrew's contract.
Andrew, we'll double your salary.
two bags of Skittles?
I'm in.
But not the shareable size.
No, of course not. I'm not greedy.
I'd like to point out that when I bought a shareable size bag of peanut M&Ms with Paul in the car, I had to disabuse him of the notion that we'd actually be sharing them. This says shareable.
Yeah.
We will not be sharing these, Paul.
This says family size. Really, it's a family of one.
You are not a member of the family.
You are not a made man.
So that's exciting, you know, that we're getting some more Star Wars TV show, and we'll talk about the other TV show here in a minute. But also, it was announced since the last time we spoke that one of my favorite Star Wars games, Dark Forces, has been remastered, and it's already out on consoles and PC. I think it's downloadable, but it's out now for you to revisit the story of Kyle Katarn.
I love Kyle Katarn.
The Death Star plans, and you know, the I don't want to say they're Death Troopers. I don't remember. Super Troopers? No, that's a TV show.
Dark Troopers.
Yeah, before they popped up in shows like The Mandalorian, some of that stuff started there.
Yeah, some of that retro Star Wars gaming is a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, and that's one of my favorites. I love that story and where it went. So I mean, I may have to check out the remaster, and you know, I'm sure it doesn't hold up as well. Like, it's not like they redid the game. They just remastered it. But I'm, you know, I really love that game. I played it so much.
Yeah.
It popped in my little CD into my PC, played
That's
it.
Right.
That was the days before you had to use the mouse and keyboard. It was the Doom controls, right? So you just had to use the keyboard to move around and shoot.
You know, I've never played it on console. I always played it on my PC. And of course, you know, I always had a PC that, you know, was not as fast as it needed to be.
A 386.
Yeah. I mean, well, and it was a 486, but just not as fast as it needed to be.
Yeah. This was the first Star Wars game I played on my PC that wasn't on a console or at an arcade. This was it. So it was a huge amount of fun. I remember getting stuck in like this little canal and couldn't get out for like 2 hours. I don't think you were supposed to be able to go in the canal. And then once I got in there, man, it was awful. But overall, loved the game. You know, it was Doom, but with a nice Star Wars veneer and story and, you know, fluff behind it. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they really brought. I mean, there were so many Doom clones back in the late 90s.
Well, that Doom era of first person shooters was just so much fun. Like Rise of the Triad. I mean, just all that stuff was just so much fun.
Quake.
We would network computers together back in the day.
Oh yeah.
That was a blast and a half.
There were some good LAN parties back then, both for that and also day. And then later on, like around 97, 98, when the first Warcraft came out.
let's revisit the mid 90s
old guys talk about arcade games. You
know? About the golden age of PC gaming between Warcraft and Dark Forces and X-Wing and TIE Fighter and all those things.
And all the cables.
All the cables. Everywhere.
You know, all you kids with your fancy little laptops, including myself, I'm literally recording from a laptop, don't remember the days of towers.
My buddy, his dad owned a business, and so we would go to his dad's office to, you know, all of us with, you know, bringing our big box of cables, mm-hmm. you know. And you know, set up our LAN party. It was hilarious. And we'd just be there all night long playing Doom.
Eating pizza, great. Drinking soda. Oh,
God. I mean, just disgusting by the following morning. I mean,
Great. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, before we go too far down. Well, I mean, this entire podcast is about reminiscing.
That's right.
Things that happened in the 90s.
The
90s, you know, because in 1999, a little small film was released in movie theaters.
Let's call it an art house film.
Boutique. I mean, it was, I believe,
it's considered an independent
film, right? Because it was fully funded by Lucasfilm himself.
Yeah, George spent his own money.
By 20th Century Fox at the time.
Yep.
Phantom Menace came out in theaters 25 years ago.
May 19th, something like that.
You would think we would have looked that up before the show, but we did. somewhere in May,
May Phantom 19th Menace came out. Was the U.S. release date. It premiered in Los Angeles on May 16th.
But, and if you wanted to watch it on May 18th, you could watch the Turkish bootleg release that your friend somehow had on a CD. But I didn't watch it that way. That was not my first viewing of The Phantom Menace. I guess we should talk about our experiences, if you remember them. It was 25 years ago, watching Phantom Menace for the first time.
I was in college at the time, which I think was, you know, a peak time for being able to enjoy your fandom and various nerd hobbies. So, you know, living in a college town, there was a lot of excitement about it. I was there on a Saturday. I don't think I was there Friday. I think I went and saw it Saturday. But it was great. The place was packed. The energy was good. Some people dressed up in those early days of dressing up for movies. And we'll talk about what we thought about the movie at the end. But overall, I enjoyed it, loved it. It was first Star Wars movies in decades. So it was a great experience for me. Aaron?
I had, in 1999, I had been married for 10 years. Actually, no. I had been divorced for, 2 years in 1999. And when my buddies and I had this long conversation about recreating our first experience with Star Wars that we should have our moms drive us to the theater. which we did.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, we were all very excited. We went and saw it opening day. And, you know, I cannot begin to tell you how excited we were when we saw the trailer. I mean, that trailer was insane.
Yeah.
Probably one of the best cut trailers up until that time. You know, with that image of the Gungans riding coming through the mist. It looked very Akira Kurosawa. I mean, there's just so much atmosphere in that trailer. And then the title hits, Phantom Menace, and you're like, oh my God, this sounds so wild and cool. So our spirits were really high going into to see this movie. And I'll talk about how that turned out later. But that was my experience. I saw it in the theaters opening day. My mother drove me to the show.
I have to ask a follow-up question here. What did your mother say about this idea? She went along with it. What was her attitude, though?
You know, my mom is the person who introduced me to Star Wars.
Yeah.
She I think I've shared this story on a previous episode of Star Wars with Aaron and Polly and Andrew, but she first gave me the comic book for Star Wars. And I remember thinking, you know, people had talked to me about what Star Wars was, and I was in 77, I was 10 years old. And, you know, I just, that doesn't sound like anything. That sounds stupid. And when I saw the comic book, the original Howard Chaykin Marvel comic, I was like, okay, this looks cool, you know. And then she took me to go see the movie, and then I saw it, you know, 8 times in the movie theater. So it was great. So, you know, Mom thought it was very amusing.
Okay, good.
That me and Gary and Jamie, you know, our buddies, were all going to have their moms drop them off at the movie theater.
I just imagine if I approached my mom with that idea when I was in my like, say, late 30s. first question would have been, like, are you hurt? I'm not hurt. Is your eyesight okay? Yeah, eyesight's okay. Is your car broken down? Nope, car's doing okay. And then there would have been a long silence on the other end of the phone. And she would have been like, well, if you need me to, I guess. Paul, how about you?
So I was working at Ruby Tuesday in 1999. And yeah, peak 90s. And I, you know, of course, first Star Wars movie in quite a while, all very, very excited. And, you know, I was working at Ruby Tuesday, and that Ruby Tuesday was built right in front of a newer movie theater. I think the movie theater itself actually opened up in 98, because I worked at the movie theater too. In fact, I still kind of moonlighted at the movie theater back then, because I would work at Ruby Tuesday, and for a little extra cash, I would go to the movie theater at night and help, like, clean up the concession stands and stuff like that, just for a little extra cash, you know, college kid. Mm-hmm. And so I was working at Ruby Tuesday the day that tickets were going to go on sale. And this was before the days of, you know,
online ticket sales.
Online ticket sales, right? Before Fandango and right. AMCtheaters.com and stuff like that. Like, you could only get tickets at the theater. And this, now keep in mind, the tickets were going on sale, I believe, a solid month and a half, 2 months, right around this time. Well, maybe a little earlier than this.
Designated seat either. It was
Designated seats either. Yeah. Right.
It was a fight. It was a blood sport.
Yeah. It was an uncivilized time. Yeah. Let's be clear.
It really was. And so, you know, like, tickets were going on sale that day. I was working at Ruby Tuesday, and you could literally see the front of the movie theater. It was an AMC 24. It still is. I don't know if it's still 24, but it's an AMC in Hampton, Virginia. And we could see people starting to line up the day before, like evening before tickets were going on sale. And I'm like, oh, what's happening over there? And I'm working and I'm looking out the window. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. Am I going to have a trouble getting tickets if I don't get in line? And so after work that day, when I got off work, I straight up went straight over to AMC and hopped in the line. And I had friends join me throughout the evening. Friends who were going to join me for the actual screening, you know, came in, sat with me. We, you know, just kind of like traded off, had food, stuff like that. And obviously my memory 25 years ago, but there were over 100, if not more.
And how long was the line, would you say, when you got in there?
I was probably around 50-ish back. So if I was about 50-ish back, you know, trying to do the memory stuff, then that line had to be at least 150, 200 people long, because I was nowhere near the end of the line.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was basically like a little Star Wars festival all night. Because, you know, obviously this is days before laptops and iPads and stuff like that. So, you know, people just had to entertain themselves. So we had people playing Star Wars music and pulling their cars up and, you know, blasting music from there. Or people were reenacting lightsaber battles with their, their lightsaber toys all evening. And it was honestly, I remember so much about it because it was just a fond memory of, you know, camping out, waiting overnight, literally just for tickets. It's not like it was a Prince concert. It was a freaking movie.
What's crazy to me. I have never in my life waited in line longer than 5 or 10 people to get a movie ticket ever.
And I'm in my mid-40s now. So in retrospect,
I wish you had that time back, right?
Yeah, right? Yeah. Yes. In retrospect, I think about it and I'm like, you know, they showed that damn film like every 15 minutes. And like, if I, and this was again the day days before reserve seating, so I'm like, did it really matter that I had the ticket to that specific screening at that specific time, a month and a half ahead of time? Or could I have just waited and if that showing sold out, just gone to the 10:15 a.m. showing instead?
No, you did the right thing, Paul. You did
I did the right thing for a 20-year-old Paul, for sure. But for a 45-year-old Paul, no. because, you know, what I haven't yet revealed is that there is another local cinema called the Commodore Theater. It's in Portsmouth, Virginia. So I got my tickets, came home, you know, and then the Commodore Theater announced that they would be showing Phantom Menace. So, of course, when I bought my tickets, I bought them for like the earliest showing possible. I think it was like 9 a.m. release day. And then the Commodore Theater announced that they were going to be showing Phantom Menace as well. Now, the Commodore Theater is a dine-in movie theater with like tables instead of like long rows back then. But it's not like your Alamo Draft House or your Cinema Cafe. It was a little bit more upscale than that. They had little tables. You picked up a phone. You ordered your food. On top of that, at the time, it was THX certified, and they announced that they were upgrading to be Lucasfilm THX certified, which involved literally like dozens of speakers hidden behind murals on the wall so that the sound would literally travel from speaker to speaker to speaker to speaker all the way around you. Like truly the definition of surround sound, with, you know, dozens of speakers, and they were certified, like literally like people from Lucasfilm and THX showed up on site and I don't know, like looked at either set them up or looked at their setup and said, yep, check, you are certified. Mm-hmm. And so they were announcing that they were going to be showing the Phantom Menace. Now, the thing about the Commodore at the time, still honestly kind of true. The only thing that's changed is they take credit cards now. But at the time, they were cash only for tickets, same day only for tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So the night before seeing the Phantom Menace at my AMC, I also camped out at the Commodore to get tickets to see it again the same evening. I camped out at the Commodore. Got my tickets, went to see the Phantom Menace, came home, slept, went and saw the Phantom Menace again at the Commodore with the Lucasfilm THX certified theater. So I camped out twice for this damn movie and saw twice on opening day.
Well, I think the most important question is, did you notice the difference in the sound quality between
Yes.
Yeah.
God, yes. And AMC, don't get me wrong. I mean, AMC, it was a brand new, like I said, about like probably a year old at that time, movie theater. So it's a good theater. But the THX was another level, the official one.
I think it's important to note, and I don't think – I think a lot of people who come to Star Wars late, Phantom Menace, don't recognize what a pioneer George Lucas was in film sound. I mean, we all think about him in special effects, but there wasn't – ever a movie that sounded like Star Wars, right? The first one. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the sound effects are just so deeply immersive. You know, you sound like you're in a different world. Even on 1977, theater sound, right? I mean, that was long before THX. In fact, you know, his frustration with how his movies were projected and presented was what made him go and create audio technology that would allow the movies to sound like they sounded in his head. I mean, he changed so much about the way we experience film. It is incredible to me that one guy can influence so very much in his career. And really, I mean, just over a period of 20 years, you know, he created all of this change in the industry and the way we experience film.
Well, and credit to where credit's due, right? Ben Burtt was the sound designer for the Star Wars movies. Uh-huh. And he's the guy original. Truly responsible for you know, the sounds we think of Star Wars. He's also the guy responsible for how punches sound in Raiders of the Lost Ark, which very distinctive. Yeah. An Indiana Jones punch is unlike any punch in cinemas.
you have to consider that, yes, you know, there are many individuals who are responsible for, you know, different things in that we credit to George. But George is the guy at the center of it all.
Yeah, that made it all happen. Absolutely. Yeah, said, no disagreement here.
Who said, no, this isn't good enough. We have to do better. And, you know, everything that I've ever heard about George is that, you know, best idea wins. You know, that, you know, he sits in a room and listens to all the ideas and is very collaborative with the people in his employ. And I'm deeply impressed by what he accomplished in his Star Wars years.
Up to and including the prequels, you know, regardless of your feelings about them, they changed cinema.
No, you cannot fault George on his vision for technology and his vision for the way you tell stories. You can fault George on story crafting.
Directing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, he is just a madman when it comes to his ability to be his vision for the future of film. I'm deeply blown away by it, you know, and I assume we're ready to move into talking about Phantom Menace.
We are.
But, you know, one of the things I note on my rewatch is, again, that sound. Before you notice anything on the screen, it's that sound. I mean, it's the pod race.
I was about to say, anyone who saw Phantom Menace in theaters remembers the sounds of the pod race.
Yeah, I mean, it is so visceral. You know, you feel the pod race would not be nearly so immersive were it not for the spectacularly thunderous sounds that you get to enjoy. And, you know, one of the things that I'm so appreciative of is, yeah, you know, you could see it in a THX theater back in the day. But, you know, we've all got home theaters now that are, you know, stupendous by, you know, 1990 standards. And being able to enjoy that in your home and just, you know, surrounded by that sound is amazing. And that's one of the things that I'm just like, there are many things that I dislike about the Phantom Menace, but it is beautiful to look at and it is even more beautiful to listen to. That sound just gets you in the chest. You know, and the pod racers are so distinctive, you really cannot exceed that. I mean, it's just it blows me away.
We can pick out each one by the sound of its engine.
Yeah.
Even before, like, if you're not watching or you're looking away, you can hear the sound. That's like, oh, that's that pod, because each one has a unique sound to it. And you know, I know we're talking more about sound effects, but the John Williams score is also phenomenal from the opening credits, right? You know,
it does a lot of heavy lifting.
I mean, the Duel of the Fates. I mean, I remember they literally had so much faith in that song that they released it as a music video and played it Total Request Live.
Well, all of the emoting happens through his music because it's not happening on the acting.
We are ready to hop in.
But that's more the second movie than the first movie. But go on.
Well, you know, the movie is spectacular to look at. It is spectacular to listen to. It is really hard to enjoy the story in the film. I really struggle with how poorly directed the film is in terms of, you know, drawing best performances from the actors. And I mean, everyone's kind of got this mid-range, and Lucas's take on Jedis is, you know, they've got to be emotionless, passionless, and so everyone's kind of right here. But so is, you know, Princess Amidala, you know, I'm sorry, Queen Amidala. Most of the time it's just, I must see the Viceroy, you know, I really want some range. And the only one who's emoting is the child, Anakin. Yippee. You know, which you do see echoed in Young Indiana Jones, because Young Indiana Jones does the same damn thing. Yeah. It's like they're the same character. Common link there, George. it frustrates me. because I really wanted more from the performances in the film. And that's still what frustrates me today. Every time I watch, I'm like, maybe it'll be different this time. Maybe they'll maybe he'll have cut in better performances. No.
So we all revisited Phantom Menace in time for this recording. And, you know, I have gone through many phases of my Phantom Menace appreciation or lack thereof. And that, you know, when it first came out, I saw that film 12 times in theaters at least. I saw it so many times in the movie theater. Again, because I worked at the movie theater. So I just would like watch it, go like to the bathroom and go watch it again kind of thing. again, these were kind of the halcyon days of cinema for me because I worked there. But then I kind of went through, like everyone else, this time period where it's like, oh, the originals were so good and the prequels suck so bad, blah, 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 blah. And I have found that, you know, now that we've got the three trilogies, the originals, the prequels, and the sequels, I have regained an appreciation for the prequel trilogy, especially because they've incorporated elements of it so much in the Clone Wars TV series and Ahsoka and Mandalorian and things like that. And I have really gained an appreciation. And I never fell completely out of love with Phantom Menace, but what I find and what I continue to find in my Phantom Menace rewatches, which it's been a few years since Episode 7 came out in theaters, was probably the last time I saw Phantom Menace. I find that the things I like about the film, I like more than ever, and the things I dislike about the film, I dislike more than ever. But I also find that the things I dislike about the film are not as prevalent in the film as I remember them to be. Like Jar Jar talking, yeah. or right. Anakin's acting. You know, those are really the things that grate on me. Right. Honestly, when it comes to the whole film, my only real gripes with it are Anakin and Jar Jar, which of course, you know, kind of led to both actors going through such horrible times in their life because everyone felt the same way. But I find that whenever those characters open their mouths, I'm like,
yeah. Oh yeah, it's cringy.
It is cringy.
That and the Trade Federation guys who just seem like a racial stereotype of Japanese people.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm just, you're just like, oh, who thought this was a good idea? And what I find alarming about that and amazing about that, I should say, is that George isn't that guy. George isn't a racist. He is very clearly not a racist. And how he did not see that, you know, this just seems like you're painting with a racial stereotype here, is surprising to me that nobody in the room was able to say, I think this is a bad take on it. You know?
Yeah.
I think there are things about the movie that I do enjoy. But where the reliance on the digital effects is frustrating in certain scenes, because you're like, ooh, like on this rewatch, I was noticing how some things haven't held up really well. Like they're going to the water's edge, you know, to go to the submerged Gungan city. And, you know, the effect doesn't work. I mean, it just looks very much like we're on a soundstage.
Were you watching this on a 4K or Blu-ray, or are you streaming? How
I was streaming it on Disney Plus.
Okay. Yeah, that's how I watched it as well. And I do find that the 4K, especially for films, you know, of the 90s, you know, certain age like us, definitely exacerbates the delineation between what's real and what's CG in a way that at the time,
it didn't matter.
Yeah, it wasn't as clear, right? I mean,
the technology in your home TVs at the time are you know, Stone Age compared to our current TVs. And Aaron, I guess you're watching this on a 4K TV, right?
No.
Oh no.
I'm watching it on an HD screen, like, but not a 4K.
1080 probably.
Yeah.
But when it came out, you know, when Phantom Menace first came out in for home viewing, VHS baby.
Oh yeah. Yep.
DVD didn't come till later.
The tapes. Well, you know, for me, you know, certainly both you guys had talked somewhat about that, the acting. Aaron especially had mentioned kind of the lack of range. But I will say this is the broadest range of the three prequel movies. It gets so much worse in the second and third movie. So for me, I actually look at this and watch, so like, wow, this is some pretty good for prequel movies. We got some good acting going on. I love Natalie Portman and Liam Neeson's interaction when they're on Tatooine and she's disguised as Padme, right? I love him like, well, you know, the queen trusts me, and he walks away and she's like, you assume too much.
Yeah.
And I've always had the theory personally that Liam Neeson knew that she was really the queen. He knew, I mean, he's a Jedi.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
He knew Padme was the queen, and he was just
at the end where she reveals herself and Qui-Gon looks over at Obi-Wan, and he's like, no shit.
Right, like, yeah.
They knew.
Yes, they had to know. And so I loved all like the little comments he made about, you should, you know, listen to your queen, when he knew the whole time she was the queen. I find that delightful. But, you know, the two of the main things I disliked about this, like Paul had mentioned, Jar Jar, Anakin's overacting, sure. Jar Jar is hard to watch. Well, hard to listen to, really. But I also really dislike the other thing, two other things I dislike about this movie, is the introduction of midichlorians.
Ugh, yeah.
That's
rough.
It's real rough. And then, you know, Anakin being a virgin birth.
And it's unnecessary.
It's completely unnecessary.
That's, both of those story elements are wildly unnecessary. I am fine with, hey, midichlorians, you know, is a, you know, symbiotic, you know, relationship that, you know, you can identify how strong somebody's force powers are or how attuned they are with the force by the presence of midichlorians. That I'm fine with. But the fact that they caused a virgin birth, you know, right, the midichlorians are telling us something here. That's what I hate.
He was conceived by the force.
It was a little too on the nose, right?
It was too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I did not care for that imagery symbolism at all. But and then I guess one other thing is that, you know, introduced two of my, across all eras of Star Wars, two of my favorite characters are Qui-Gon Jinn and Darth Maul. And we got to meet them both in this movie. They were amazing. And then they both died.
Yeah.
Before the first reel was over.
Yeah. Well, but Wayne will tell you that Darth Maul's not dead.
Well, that's true. Dead. I mean, they did bring him back in Clone Wars, which I had some trouble with. So had
we'll
some
all tell you, choice. Aaron. we're all of the Darth Maul Clone Wars rebels.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I just don't understand how you literally cut him in half.
And he falls. Who knows how far.
And Qui-Gon Jinn just gets stabbed. He's dead. Dead.
Yeah. I didn't like the choice for them to bring back Darth Maul and Clone Wars either. But the things I love about this movie, the design of the droid armies, you know, from the AAT tanks to the individual troopers. I love the design of the droids. I do like the kind of comedic droids. I know some people dislike that, but
I like the comedic droids. Comedy landed well with me more so than Jar Jar, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah. No, I like the whole, like, we're taking them to Coruscant. I was like, he's like, scratch his head. Arrest him. But then, you know, the pod racing you guys already mentioned. But I love the part where they're going around that first, the far dune turn on that first lap, and the Tusken Raiders are there. Yeah. And
just picking them off.
I mean, just a little skeet shooting, you know, just out there having fun with a couple beers. And I remember when that happened, everyone in the theater I was in just, you know, cheered when the Tusken Raiders showed up.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I there's a lot of things I enjoyed about it. The fight sequences, you know, Duel of the Fates.
Nothing like that had been seen in Star Wars before.
No.
Right.
Well, the effects.
You got to see Jedi's be badasses. You never really got to see that in the original films. Right. You know, because you didn't have the SFX technology to make a lot of that stuff happen. So, you know, you had these very stilted sort of Jedi fights. I mean, yeah, Return of the Jedi's got a better fight sequence in it than the first film. Yeah, The New Hope. But, I mean, it's far and away the Jedi fight sequence in Duel of the Fates is just, I mean, balls out fantastic, right?
Yeah, and I'm going to say something maybe a little controversial, Aaron.
Okay.
Here we go.
I think Phantom Menace has two of the top five scenes in all of Star Wars.
Well, if one of them's I assume one of them's Duel of the Fates.
And the other one's the pod race.
Pod race.
Yeah, no, I can't argue with that.
In terms of action, I would agree with it. I mean, those are very memorable. I just, you know, the Trade Federation story, in terms of storytelling is not particularly interesting.
I didn't follow that at all the first time I watched it, the first 12 times I watched it. I have certainly come to understand it over time.
There's a lot of World War One that fuels the storytelling in this film. You know, George is a noted history guy. In fact, you know, his whole, you know, intent on young Indiana Jones was to teach history. Yeah. You know, he was all about, you know, the documentaries that accompanied young Indiana Jones to, you know, educate children because he saw that it wasn't happening. You know, so I get that and I appreciate his passion. But boy, the storytelling in Phantom Menace and really all of the prequels is not good.
Well, I guess move away from that a little bit, but go back to the cast. You know, using Ian McDiarmid for Palpatine / Sidious, he was great. And Ray Park is, I mean, we talked about the duels. I mean, he was his ability to do a lot of those moves and acrobatics as Darth Maul was fantastic.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Let me ask you this, because I was going back and trying to think about what I knew. I feel like I knew that Chancellor Palpatine was Darth Sidious. I mean, I knew that
as well. You may have known it the same way I knew it, which was from the Zahn novels.
Maybe. Okay.
There's a reference. Because
I was wondering if anybody was surprised by that.
I think there were some who. I mean, I think for fans like us, because we were fans.
Right before.
You know, at the time. And so I think, you know, the connection of Palpatine, you know, was definitely there for some, but not for all. Definitely not for you know, younger viewers who experienced Star Wars for the first time. Yeah. Through that. Definitely. Through the prequel trilogies. But yeah, I think for some of us, we're like, oh, yeah. OK. Palpatine. Okay. Oh, that's the Emperor. Yeah.
If you were strictly a movie watcher and hadn't read any of the books, you were probably surprised. But it was referenced in the Zahn novels. They made a reference to Palpatine before he was the Emperor. He became the Emperor. And when they're going through like the old database and then either the first or second book. I guess it's the second book.
So yeah, I mean I really, you know, in my rewatch, I find joy in revisiting the film as a sense of nostalgia. Mm-hmm. You know, do I rewatch it for the same reason I rewatch, I don't know, like The Godfather or The Departed, you know, that it's just damn good movies? No, right? Like sometimes I rewatch certain movies just because they're excellent. The prequel trilogy I revisit because of nostalgia, right? Because of the joy Star Wars brings me, but not because like they broke cinema. You know, for me. But no, I actually really enjoyed rewatching it. I always do, and I'm looking forward to revisiting probably less so because of the three prequel trilogy movies.
Second's the worst.
The second the second is the one I enjoy the least.
It is beyond bad. And what is so frustrating is the missed opportunity.
Yeah,
I say all the time that what I really want is a buddy cop Jedi show, right? And that's what episode 2 should have been.
Yeah, it should have been Anakin and Obi-Wan out doing, instead of Obi-Wan being off on his own being galactic, you know, detective, that should have been the two of them out being galactic.
I needed to hear Ewan McGregor say, "I'm getting too old for this shit." You know, I mean,
he kind of does when after that assassination attempt when they're tearing around Coruscant on the speeders, he gets a little bit of that vibe like, "Oh, getting too old for this."
I really needed Mel Gibson and Danny Glover in those roles. You know, pre-anti-Semite Mel Gibson, to be clear.
Yeah, but, just to be sure.
Yeah. But, you know, I think your comment is correct, Paul. I do feel like new Star Wars has redeemed in many ways Phantom Menace for me. I can watch Phantom Menace and find things that I enjoy about it, whereas I that used to not be the case. When I would watch Phantom Menace, I'd be so annoyed by the damn thing that I couldn't get through it. But there are elements of it that I do enjoy, and I'm able to, you know, brace myself against the things that just drive me nuts about it. I will say what I enjoy about episode two, and I know we're not talking about episode two, but we brought it up, so there you go. What I do enjoy about episode two is Padme's autonomy, that she really, you know, takes charge. You know, she is not waiting to be rescued when she's chained to the post in that movie.
Yeah.
You know, she frees herself and she kicks her own ass. She doesn't need anybody else kicking ass for her. I do really like that about that movie.
Well, I have a Phantom Menace question. I want to loop back around to Aaron. You had mentioned earlier you and your two middle-aged friends going with your mom, being dropped off by your moms, and how excited you were walking in. You referenced earlier about how you're going to tell us how you felt when you walked out.
Oh,
I'm curious how 30-year-old Aaron felt walking out of Phantom Menace.
Me and my buddies walked out of that, and we were all deeply disappointed. And probably, you know, disappointed bordering on angry at how let down we were by the film, that the trailer was so sexy. I mean, we were seduced by the trailer, and, you know, everything that I just said that, you know, that I disliked about the movie, I mean, it just hung around our necks, and how unhappy we were about, you know, the missed opportunity. And that's really where we were, is like, you know, this was going to be great and it wasn't. And, you know, what the hell's a Jar Jar and why did we have to spend so much time with him? You know,
when I walked out, there were certainly things like Jar Jar that bugged me walking out of that first showing. But the overall excitement, the action, the pod racing, Darth Maul, there was enough good stuff that I focused on that I was very positive walking out of it.
Yeah,
I know,
same.
Paul, having watched it 12 times in the first week, it sounds like you felt the same way.
Yeah, very much the same way. You know, I felt like, of course, I was pissed at, like, they killed Darth Maul, you know?
Anakin doesn't have a t-shirt.
Anakin doesn't have a dad. What the hell?
Yeah, like, there were definitely aspects of it that I was like, that's stupid. But, like, it did not take away from my enjoyment of the film, you know, in a way that clearly I didn't rewatch it, because I did many, many times.
Yeah. I picked up on VHS and started rewatching it as soon as I could.
I saw Phantom Menace once in the theaters, and I would like to compare and contrast that. I saw Star Wars 5, The Final Frontier, twice in theaters.
Trek 5?
Yeah, so that's what I meant. Sorry, Star Trek 5.
Yeah, Star Trek 5 is a stinker. Whew.
It is, yeah. But I up to that point, I had seen every Star Trek movie multiple times in the theater, and I saw...
He was hell-bent on doing it.
Well, I saw...
break the streak.
I couldn't believe how bad Star Trek 5 was, and so I went back the next day. I'm like, maybe I was in a bad mood, because that happens to me. If I'm not in the right mood, I will hate a movie.
Yeah.
And so I went back with an open mind, and whew, that is a stinker.
It is a stinker. I love Star Trek, but Star Trek 5 is a stinker.
Yeah, it is a stinker. Fucking Cybok. Right.
Well, so when are we gonna settle down and watch episode 2?
I don't know. We'll have to, you know, we probably won't wait for the 25th anniversary.
No, we have to wait for the 25th anniversary.
I prefer we don't wait for the 25th anniversary.
Yeah. Maybe we'll revisit it sometime soon, because we've got Star Wars ramping up over the summer. You know, in addition to the Phantom Menace re-release, which I mentioned earlier, but just as a reminder, Phantom Menace is back in theaters on May the 3rd, because that's a Friday. But it also will include an exclusive preview of The Acolyte, which is the new TV series coming to Disney Plus. And that's releasing, I believe, June 4th.
And so, The Acolyte's like a way back one. It's like
it's a High Republic. I think High Republic. Is that
I think you're right.
I think you're right. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Era of
like
Star
a thousand
Wars.
Years before New Hope or something like that. Yeah.
Right. Well, I'm excited. I love Star Wars. You guys know that. And I'm very excited to check it out and continue our rewatch of the series. Plus, we still need to read the second Zahn novel. Talk about
it. Yes, we do. Yeah, we've got plenty of Star Wars with Aaron and Polly coming your way. So.
And Andrew.
and maybe Wayne.
Under his renegotiated contract.
Yes.
Skittles for all.
Let's not let everybody taste the rainbow. Let's just, you know. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought of The Phantom Menace, who you hated most. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on an episode, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise. You Maybe even also, a pod racer. You could win a pod racer.
We're not committing to that.
I'm just saying maybe. It can maybe legally.
Maybe a Lego pod racer, maybe.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, or X.
What a deal. Well, guys, you know, our moms are due to pick us up here from the podcast any moment now.
Yeah, I wanted to recreate my first podcast, so I had my mom drop me off today.
All right, we'll do it all again next time, guys.
Catch you then.
See ya.